Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
We have some big gridiron news. The 10th team joins the Big Ten. We also talk about Bud Grant and Johnny Majors as coaches and players in respective sports, as well as many other great Hall of Famers. And all this and more coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with their tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen. And we are going to talk about our May 21st football history headlines and birthdays of Hall of Famers. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. But before we do that, I have to do an apology because last night, in the heat of the moment, I forgot probably one of the most important May 20th birthdays there is. And this gentleman is a true Hall of Famer. May 20th, 1927, Superior, Wisconsin, Bud Grant, the former Canadian Football League and NFL coach with the Minnesota Vikings, was born. Grant, besides being a coach, was a great athlete too, as he played in the NBA. As a matter of fact, even though the Philadelphia Eagles picked him in the 1950 NFL draft, he waylaid his NFL debut to play hoops with the Minneapolis Lakers for two seasons, and they won an NBA championship each year he was there. In 1951, he finally stepped onto the gridiron as a pro, playing defense in year one, and then was second in receiving in the league in 1952 with 56 receptions. After his playing days were done, Bud took a drink of the coaching players at the pro level of football. Graham went into the CFL first, and right after he had just completed a 10-year tenure as the head coach of the highly successful Winnipeg Blue Bombers of the CFL, he took over the NFL's Minnesota Vikings in 1967. It didn't take long for him to bring success to the Vikes as well, as he had the Bombers, either because in just the second season in 1968 in the NFL, he launched the Vikings on a string of championship seasons rarely equaled in sports competition. From 1968 through 1978, the Vikings won the NFC Central Division 10 times in 11 seasons, missing only in 1972. And during that span, the Vikings won the 1969 NFL Championship and NFC titles in 1973, 1974, and 1976. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined coach Bud Grant into their Canton, Ohio Museum in 1997. And I am just so sorry that I was such a bonehead and missed that on his birthday. Coach Grant is still with us, and we're very appreciative that he is still with us and has brought so much to the game of football, both north and south of the border, and successful in everything he played and everything he coached, every team he coached. And we're very happy to present that to him, and just apologize it was belated in a day early because of some knucklehead that's doing a podcast. Now, let's get into your May 21st football history headlines, now that we've made that correction to our May 20th. The newspapers.com football history headline of the day is from the Republican and Herald from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, when they printed off Miss State returns to West Conference. This was in reference to the Spartans having rejoined the Big Nine Conference to again make it the Big Ten. The Spartans were eligible to compete in their new conference in every sport except football in the 1950 and 1951 season. Football would have to wait until the 1953 season to have a standing in the Big Ten Conference, because the gridiron schedules had already been finalized for the nine members that were already in the Big Nine teams for the next three seasons back in December of 1948. Now let's talk about some birthdays of Hall of Famers for May 21st. And we'll start off in 1935, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Johnny Majors, the 1954 through 1956 season star halfback of the Tennessee Volunteers football program, was born. The footballfoundation.org starts off by telling what a versatile player Majors was. He did it all for the Vols. He did running, passing, kicking, and he played defense with a capital D. Just for some examples of all-around great play, Majors returned 36 punts for a 12.2-yard average and one touchdown in his career, along with 15 kick returns for 22.9 yards per kick return. Majors also intercepted two passes at Tennessee and punted 83 times for a 39.1-yard average. Johnny received the media accolades, too, as he was a unanimous All-American in 1956, and he finished second in the Heisman Trophy balloting and leading the Vols to a 10-1 record and an appearance in the Sugar Bowl and a final national ranking of number 2. He was also named United Press International's Back of the Year. The National Football Foundation selected Johnny Majors for entrance into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1987. And after college, Majors played one season for the Montreal Alouettes in the CFL before embarking on a long coaching career. The Saturday Down South website fills us in that Majors began his coaching career as an assistant at Tennessee in 1957, and he would work as an assistant at Mississippi State and Arkansas before accepting his first head coaching job at Iowa State in 1968. He returned to Knoxville in 1977 and led Tennessee to 12 winning seasons during his 16-season tenure as head coach. Majors won three SEC championships with the Volunteers in 1985, 1989, and 1990, and reached 11 bowl games as the head coach at Tennessee, posting a 7-4 record in those games. Majors stepped away from his job at Tennessee late in the 1992 season with a little bit of controversy. The coach left Knoxville with a 116-62-8 record. His contributions of coaching up winning football was not over, though, as he returned to coach the University of Pittsburgh in 1993, the same school that Majors won a national title with in 1976. And I believe there was a guy named Tony Dorsett on that team, too, that had a little bit to do with it. But Coach Majors definitely knew how to draft great players like Tony Dorsett and knew how to coach him up, too, and did it with the Volunteers, too, in Tennessee. May 21st, 1940, Bryan, Texas. James Saxton Jr., the great University of Texas halfback from 1959 to 1961, arrived via stork delivery. The NFF states that Saxton was one of the quickest players in college football's history. The Longhorns coach, Daryl Royal, envisioned James, who was also referred to as the Rabbit, as a running quarterback, but soon moved him to running back in 1960. Saxton would go on to lead the team in rushing that season with 407 yards and an average of 5.4 yards per carry. Saxton thrived in the running back's role, and by the time his senior season rolled around, he had tallied up 9 touchdowns and was leading the high-scoring Longhorn attack with runs of 80, 79, 66, 56, 49, and 45 yards. The unanimous selection that year became the first running back in Longhorn history to become an All-American and finished third in voting for the Heisman Trophy, trailing only Hall of Famers Ernie Davis of Syracuse and Bob Ferguson of the Ohio State Buckeyes. Oh, and the way he completed his college career, oh, wow, that's something special too. It ended with a 12-7 victory over Ole Miss in the 1962 Cotton Bowl Classic, as it was a pivotal play of the contest, may have been a record-setting 73-yard quick kick from Saxton to ice. James Saxton Jr. was honored with induction in the College Football Hall of Fame in 1996 after the National Football Foundation tabulated up their votes. And James was chosen as the 146th overall pick by the St. Louis Cardinals in the NFL's 1962 draft and the 75th pick of the Dallas Texans of the AFL. After figuring things out, he signed with Dallas, but after one season, he decided to enter into the banking business instead. A little bit more lucrative back then. But can you imagine that? You know, it sounds like, you know, when they were playing Ole Miss, when Texas was playing Ole Miss in that Cotton Bowl game, they got in a little bit of trouble. They were up 12-7, you know, only up by 5, and they had to do a quick kick, and he nailed it 73 yards. You know, what a clutch kick that had to be, and try to catch a team by surprise, too. It wasn't like he was in, you know, total punt formation. I'm going to have to look that one up on the YouTube machine and check that out, see what happens. May 21st, 1943, Dorrance Fife Pennsylvania. Penn State defensive tackle Glenn Ressler was born. According to the National Football Foundation's bio on him, Glenn was the center for Penn State, but he also played middle guard on defense. His excellence at his assignments won him the Maxwell Award in 1964, which is the award that's given to the nation's best player. The award was 28 years old in 1964, and Ressler was the fifth lineman to ever win it. He was also All East twice and a consensus All-American in 1964. In 1963, he had 15 unassisted tackles when Penn State upset number one ranked Ohio State 26-0. The Associated Press and Sports Illustrated named him the Lineman of the Week that year. Glenn Ressler received the great honor of being selected for inclusion in the College Football Hall of Fame in 2001. May 21st, 1943, Corpus Christi, Texas. Johnny Rowland, the Missouri two-way running back, defensive back from 1962 to 1964 and 65, arrived in his life. The footballfoundation.org website says that as a sophomore in 1962, he was a running back. He rushed for 830 yards, seventh best in the total nation, and scored 78 points, ninth in the nation that year. He rushed for 155 yards against Oklahoma State, a 104 against Iowa State, and then he returned for his junior year in 1964. Coach Dan Devine moved him to defensive back. He made All-America at this position in 1965. As Rowland stood 6'2", weighed 198, and was a power runner. In 1965, Rowland also returned 42 punts and kickoffs for 690 yards, averaging 16.4 yards on each. Missouri retired his number 23 jersey, and Johnny Rowland's collegiate football records are celebrated in the College Football Hall of Fame after his induction in 1998. He went into the pros, and he had an eight-year playing career in the pros with St. Louis and the New York Giants. Then became a career as an assistant coach and with the Green Bay Packers 1974, Notre Dame Fighting Irish 1975, and various pro teams after that. May 21st, 1958, Berea, Ohio. Jim Richter, the North Carolina State Center from 1976 to 1979, was born. According to the National Football Foundation, in 1979, Jim was the very first player at the center position to take home the Outland Trophy, which was named for the nation's best interior lineman. The award had been in existence for 33 years, had never been won by a center. And that's the most interior lineman there is, isn't it? Richter was a two-time All-American, a two-time winner of the Jacobs Trophy, as the best blocker at his position in the ACC for North Carolina State. Jim Richter's collegiate football records are celebrated in the College Football Hall of Fame after his induction in 1998. And Richter had a nice long pro career too, as he played 16 years in the National Football League with the Buffalo Bills and the Atlanta Falcons. May 21st, 1977, San Diego, California. Texas running back Ricky Williams arrived to claim his date of birth. Ricky wore the Longhorn burnt orange from 1995 to 1998 and completed his collegiate career as the NCAA's all-time leading rusher with 6,279 yards. Ricky was a unanimous first-team All-American in both his junior and senior seasons, taking home the 1998 Maxwell Award and Walter Camp Player of the Week Award, Player of the Year Award, and he was the first ever two-time recipient of the Doak Walker Award. The two-time Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year won back-to-back NCAA rushing titles in 1997 and 1998, and he set 21 NCAA records, including all-purpose yards 7,206 and rushing touchdowns 72. The powerhouse back reached a milestone reached by only a few very talented players as he posted three straight 1,000-yard seasons on the ground. Williams won the Heisman Trophy in 1998, following his All-American career at Texas. The College Football Hall of Fame proudly placed a display in the honor of Ricky Williams in the legendary museum in 2015. And with a fifth overall pick in the 1999 NFL draft by the New Orleans Saints, Williams would go on to spend 11 seasons in the NFL with the Saints, Miami Dolphins, and Baltimore Ravens, and even one season with the Toronto Argonauts of the Canadian Football League. He also holds a Miami Dolphin record with 24 100-yard football games on the ground. And I believe it was in that draft that he was the one that the coach, Mike Ditka, traded all his draft picks at New Orleans for just to have that number five spot to choose Ricky Williams to bring him to the Saints team. That's how valuable he was honored by the Super Bowl winning coach, the once winning Super Bowl coach of the Bears. So pretty good numbers you have there. So, you know, going back, if you want to be able to read through some old articles like we did today, you need to check out newspapers.com. At newspapers.com, you get access to over 640 million pages worth of news from the U.S., Canada, England, Scotland, Ireland, and more, dating back to 1798 all the way to yesterday. You can get a free one-week subscription to newspapers.com. Get ready with that pencil by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers, and with a paid subscription, you'll be also helping to support the production of this and other Sports History Network shows. That's sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers. We are sure glad that you joined us here again tonight. We hope you had a nice, relaxing listen. Well, whatever you were doing, if you were taking a jog, taking a walk, sitting down, listening in your car, just doing some homework or whatever, we appreciate you being with us, and we hope you join us each and every day to grab a little glimpse of gridiron history, because we bring it to you every single day of the year and one day at a time. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great Gridiron Day.
The 2021 Professional Football Researchers Association Convention will be held at the Gold Jacket Lounge at the Pro Football Hall of Fame during the final weekend of June. Convention speakers will celebrate the 100th anniversary of the founding of the NFL. The fee for the convention is $50 for members and $100 for non-members. The fee includes admission to the convention and Pro Football Hall of Fame, meals on Friday evening and Saturday afternoon, and free parking. All convention activities are subject to COVID-19 protocols. For more details, click on the 2021 PFRA convention link at profootballresearchers.org.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.